It's a pleasure to introduce our next instructor based in India. Rajiv Mantri is director of private investment firm GPSK Investment Group and executive director of Navam Capital, an India-focused venture capital firm. Prior to founding Navam, Rajiv worked as a venture capitalist at New York-based Lux Capital, focusing on investments in energy, water, and nanomaterials. In August 2010, Rajiv co-founded Vion Biosciences, a biopharmaceutical company, and served as Viome's president through the company's formative years. He graduated with a BS in materials science and engineering from Northwestern University and an MBA from Columbia Business School, specializing in private equity and value investing. On behalf of the MOI Global membership community, a very warm welcome to you, Rajiv. The floor is yours. Please go ahead.
Thank you very much, John, for that. I'll be presenting an investment case for Reliance Industries Limited, a giant conglomerate that has been at the forefront of a data revolution in India as a disruptive entrant into a cartelized telecom market. So let's dig in. Founded in 1977, 40 years ago, by Dhirubhai Ambani, who was the son of a school teacher and first generation entrepreneur, Reliance is today India's largest private sector company, and it ranks at number 203 on the Fortune Global 500 list. Reliance is a sprawling conglomerate with an entrepreneurial DNA. Its motto is growth is life, and they take that pretty seriously, as we will see. This is a large and complex business. So let's start with a very high level view. Over the last 12 months, Reliance's revenues totaled ₹3.5 trillion. As the revenue mix for the financial year 2017 shows, it very much remains an oil-centric business, with the refining and petrochemicals division dominating both revenues and earnings. Each of Reliance's businesses in refining, petrochemicals, retail, and media have their own comparative strengths. So for some added context, let's take a whirlwind tour through these large businesses and get a sense for this giant company. Reliance owns and operates the world's single largest location oil refinery. This refinery is 30% bigger than the next biggest refinery in the world. This is a unique asset for its scale and quality, and its location on India's western coast in the state of Gujarat gives it a unique advantage in sourcing crude oil from the Middle East and other parts of the world. With the Nelson Complexity Index of 14, the Jamnagar refinery in Gujarat is able to refine even the most low-grade crude. The sourcing power, pricing power, and immense flexibility that this capability endows the refinery with makes it a truly special asset in the global refining business. In petrochemicals, Reliance straddles both the polymer and polyester value chains and has a highly diversified product range. The petrochemicals facility is co-located on site with the refinery in Jamnagar, enabling feedstock integration. As this table shows, Reliance has recently completed the expansion of its petrochemicals capacities, and most of its product lines rank among the leading sort of capacities in the world. Management expects that after this capex, the two businesses of petrochemicals and refining would be able to generate an EBITDA of about a trillion rupees over the coming years, more than doubling from the current level. These assets are cash gushers and the company's crown jewels. Reliance entered the retailing business in 2006. It is today at a revenue run rate of over $5 billion or 300 billion rupees a year, and it is India's largest offline retailer. India's retail business or the retail sector continues to be largely disorganized and populated by mom and pop stores. And Reliance has been able to scale a business in this sector. It remains among the few successful operators in this industry, even though a number of players entered in the same period that Reliance had entered. So this giant business that Reliance has in retail has been tilting towards fashion, digital device and electronic sales, and de-emphasizing other verticals such as groceries. This is a key element for its future plans in telecom, as we shall see. Now, this is a busy slide with sort of properties that Reliance owns in the media industry. Some of the most loved brands in media that India has are actually owned by Reliance across television broadcast, film, and online. India's top news and entertainment channels across languages, its leading digital media properties, are all owned by Reliance Industries. Reliance owns content properties that appeal to practically every demographic and every taste, from children to adults, from educational content to cartoons to business news, you name it, and Reliance has content in the area. Recently, Reliance has also picked up a 25% stake in Balaji Telefilms, which is a very large television production house in India, and a 5% stake in Eros International, which is one of the largest film producers in the country. This is a large business by itself, but in the scheme of things for Reliance Industries, it is practically insignificant in relation to the size and earnings power of Reliance's other businesses. Nonetheless, the media business is of immense strategic importance for the new telecom venture. The most interesting and important thing about Reliance, in my view, is the entrepreneurial DNA of this company. They were never in the petrochemicals business, they were never in oil refining, they were never in retail, yet they have built businesses of scale from scratch in all these diverse industries. Reliance actually started life as Reliance Textiles Industries, a trader and then manufacturer of synthetic textiles, such as polyester. Over two decades, it achieved complete vertical integration to enter petrochemicals, refining, and even oil and gas exploration. The crown jewel refinery that we talked about was launched in 1999 and further expanded in 2008. The petrochemical business for Reliance acquired significant scale in 2002 when it acquired the business of IPCL, India's number two petrochemicals player. So Reliance has a 40-year history of creating wealth by building new businesses. Of late, they have entered the telecom industry again in 2010 by acquiring Spectrum for the first time after they bought out National Spectrum from a company that had won the auctions. And over the last 5 years, there has been significant capital expenditure for telecom. So this is where things stood in 2017, in March 2017, at the end of the financial year. Reliance was deriving practically its entire earnings from oil-based businesses and had been seeding the telecom industry, the telecom business, by making very large investments. So even as the capital expenditure was being made in telecom, Reliance also further burnished its refinery and petrochemical business over the period of 2011 till about 2017 by expanding capacity and building new facilities. This tended to depress return on capital numbers, much to the chagrin of market observers. And as we shall see, the stock sort of stayed in like a range bound limit. And this really gives the picture for where Reliance made the capex in the last decade. So its entire cash flows were directed towards funding capex in telecom and capex in the legacy energy and materials businesses. Of this, telecom garnered over 40% of the capex, of the incremental capex. This amounts to about $30 billion that went into building up Jio. And it's Jio which has shaken up the Indian telecom industry over the last 18 months. The thesis behind Jio is straightforward. Reliance believes that Indian consumers have willingness to pay, but they are data deprived. So it has invested over the last 7 years in building a fully IP-based voice over LTE network, a first of its kind in the world. This network infrastructure is also future-proof, capable of advancing further to 5G when that technology becomes commercially available. And Reliance has blanketed India with 4G accessibility. So earlier, there were pockets of India which had 4G and there were large parts which did not have 4G. Now, by this year, 99% of the country's population, which is obviously over a billion people, will have access to 4G at rock bottom prices. So for instance, my personal phone bill has been cut by 2/3 and I pay approximately $10 a month to get about 30 gigabytes of data and free voice calls. It is the entry of Jio into the market that has forced everybody to lower prices and it has changed the game. So in September 16, when Jio launched, they acquired about 16 million customers. And over the next 15 months, from a standing start, Jio built a customer base of 160 million by offering data for free of a very low prices. It broke several records for customer acquisition along the way and transformed India, launching it into the top ranks of the world's mobile data consumers. Towards the end of 2017, Jio launched the Jio Phone, which is a made for India 4G handset sold with a refundable deposit of about $25. Notably, the phone can be connected to any television with a cord, and it then functions as a set-top box streaming television and entertainment content. This is where the strategic importance of Reliance's media business comes to the fore. So this is what the industry looked like. Before Jio entered, there were a number of players. Some of them were large, some of them were much smaller, but most of them were just muddling along and not really sort of doing anything out of the ordinary, so to speak. It looks okay on the surface, except This is what happened after Jio entered the business. So there are two government-owned enterprises, which are in telecom, and they are pretty much just bleeding cash, surviving only because of government sponsorship. Tata exited the business by selling their telecom venture to Airtel. There was Norway's Telenor, which also sold to Airtel. Reliance Communications, which was run by Reliance Industries chairman Mukesh Ambani's younger brother, also sold to Jio. SL, another regional player, went bankrupt. And the number two and number three in the industry, Vodafone and Idea, decided to merge. So this shakeout and consolidation was precipitated by Jio's aggressive pricing and effort to bring 4G data to everybody in the country. This table really tells the story. Not only did Jio expand the market, it has been taking share from the big incumbents. These incumbents already were heavily indebted because of large loans taken out to fund spectrum acquisition from the government in auctions. And now they are sort of pretty beaten up, and there's no way to sugarcoat it. They are sort of teetering, I would say. So now it's essentially a three-horse race between Jio, the Vodafone Idea combined, and Bharti. Or to put it more accurately, it's a race between a powerful, well-fed stallion and two very tired horses. The debt ratios for the three horses now in Indian telecom are indicative of their health. Reliance is coming off of the back of a large expansion capital expenditure and expansion cycle in its core petrochemical and oil refining businesses. So it can expect cash flows from there to pick up over the coming years. However, Bharti and Idea, the other two listed comparables, have taken a beating, and their debt load has only increased. So they are in a much weaker position when it comes to the future, especially when it comes to investing again for the next wave of telecom upgradation that is to be undertaken by all the major players. So they are racing to shore up capital, and the truth is that they are on the ropes. This is the optimal strategic result for Jio. Jio would not want either of these two operators to drop dead, because that could create all kinds of regulatory concerns and invite anti-competitive scrutiny. Jio wants that they should be alive but gasping for breath at the edge of the boxing ring and on the ropes. So in the telecom industry in India, we are reaching an equilibrium where Jio will have leeway to raise prices from current levels, and the market will take a breather from last year's bloodbath. A mixture of better pricing and services subscriptions from differentiated content offered by its media stable will help Reliance Industries and Jio drive EBITDA growth. With the first phase of the rollout settled, Jio can set its sights higher now on building market share in 4G while driving the rollout of 5G over the coming years. Its competitors will struggle to fund the network and spectrum investment, while cash flows from Reliance's crown jewels in the energy and oil refining business give leeway to the management to keep investing. Strategic assets in retail and media further strengthen Jio when compared to the other incumbents. So this is how Reliance had tried to bring out the difference between 3G and 4G when they were talking about Jio. So essentially, the pre-4G world is like a dripping tap, sort of a faucet which is just nominally sort of giving water, and 4G is like a shower. the most appetizing opportunity here, I believe, is with the coming of 5G. I think 5G will open a whole new business opportunity, and it will enable all kinds of capabilities that today it is difficult for us to imagine. I use a scene from the movie Bahubali, which was a global blockbuster in India and overseas as well, to explain the difference between 4G and 5G. So early in the story of we see that the protagonist's mother is a devotee of Lord Shiva, a Hindu god, and she is conducting Abhishekam, which is a way to worship Shiva. Abhishekam entails pouring water onto the Shivling and chanting mantras. The protagonist, who is a son and also named Shiva, decides that this is too tedious. So he uproots the Shivling and carries it to a nearby waterfall. Now, water pours onto the Shivling continuously without lag and with zero marginal effort. This is the difference between 4G and 5G. 5G will enable low or zero latency, speeds that are an order of magnitude faster, and this will bring to life all the tech buzzwords that we've been hearing of for years, such as virtual reality and drones and intelligent machines and so on. So I think there is enormous embedded optionality here with Reliance and the 5G opportunity. The market has smelled the opportunity too. Reliance stock nearly doubled last year. You can see that sort of it went nowhere when the capex cycle was underway for those 3-4 years. And then after the launch of Jio, when it became clear that Reliance would be able to make a serious breakthrough, the stock has nearly doubled. And we are talking about a company that is that was already at a market cap of about 45 billion or 50 billion. And today it's at about a 90 billion market cap. Despite the valuation run up, there is considerable room for upside. Moreover, Reliance's investment in the oil-related businesses is set for strong payoffs in the coming years, as we have discussed. And the petrochemical and refining business in that way sets a floor on the price. Reliance has always been and continues to be a family business. The chairman, Mukesh Ambani, and his family own nearly half the stock, and he's India's richest man. The family has practically their entire net worth invested in the company. They pay themselves modest salaries given what the business earns, and Reliance does not pay large dividends. Some observers believe that Reliance should have increased dividends as earnings ramped up. But I believe that the claim that Reliance is engaging in empire building simply doesn't hold if you look at their history. We should remember that Reliance is a business that has compounded investor wealth at over 20-21% for 4 decades now. Its entrepreneurial DNA is to build large businesses from scratch. This is where they started, trading in textiles and then manufacturing textiles. Dhirubhai Ambani, the son of a school teacher, a man who was a petrol pump attendant, in his own lifetime reached the apex of corporate India. And given the hierarchies and stratification of a society like India, this is an absolutely remarkable feat. The current chairman, Mukesh Ambani, has been involved in the business since he was 20 years old in 1977. It was Mukesh Ambani who devised and executed the transition of Reliance from a textile company to a yarn and fiber producer, to a petrochemicals player, and then into an oil refiner over 3 decades. Reliance had no experience in any of these businesses. I think that the transition from oil to Jio is underway. And this opportunity is not restricted to India. The model, once tested and perfected in India, can and will be taken to global markets. It may sound ridiculous today, but over time, I believe Jio has the potential to make the oil business seem small, just the way the oil business overshadowed the original textile business. The opportunity before Jio is simply staggering in size. But there are always some risk factors, of course. I think the competitive intensity has settled for now, but if it sustains among the telcos, Jio's contribution to free cash flow generation will be delayed, and Reliance would continue to be reliant on the oil business that it has. And of course, the oil business is dependent on oil prices because the refining margins tend to fluctuate with the oil prices. And finally, the 5G opportunity may be pushed out further due to technical factors beyond Reliance's control. I should mention here that the management is careful not to play this up too much in terms of earnings expectations at the moment. So they are pretty conservative in how they project their plans for 5G. For the first time, India has a seat at the table when 5G standards are being set. India received 4G 5 years late than the rest of the world, and 3G came to India almost a decade late, I think. So if 5G comes to India at the same time as the rest of the world, it could open all kinds of opportunities, not just for Jio, but for the larger ecosystem as well, for the larger digital ecosystem as well. And it's inevitable that Jio will play a key role in that. So in conclusion, I would say that Reliance has a history of delivering on growth, of building businesses from scratch. It has demonstrated over the last four decades that it can enter an industry and can grow a business. Today, it is a conglomerate that owns some of the world's best refinery and petrochemicals assets. It also owns India's largest retailer. It has top-tier media and entertainment holdings. and of course, Jio is a future-ready, full-stack digital service venture rather than just a TSP. The market at the moment may be thinking that it's just a telecom company, but the business potential, as I've described, is far greater than that. More importantly, as we discussed with the state of the competitors, Jio is in pole position to deliver on the promise of telecom and data in India in the future. And once it has a working sort of well-evolved proposition in India, it is not unthinkable that Jio and Reliance Industries could also globalize the model. In sum, for these reasons, I think Reliance is very well positioned today to deliver extraordinary growth just the way it has done for the last 30 years. Thank you.
Well, Rajiv, thank you so much for such a compelling presentation. This clearly seems to be a value hiding in plain sight, if you will. So would you mind elaborating a little bit more on where you think the consensus or other investors are underappreciating or missing the value in your view?
I think people, so like I said, I think people tend to think it is simply a telecom services play. People are not looking at the potential of 5G and what kind of new business models it will enable and bring to the fore. So it's a step change. Like 5G isn't just about having faster internet. It's going to bring a whole new dimension to both consumer and enterprise. And today it's an open question as to how the chips will fall, of course. But I think a company like Jio and Reliance are in a very strong position to capitalize on that in a very large market like India, where you will have over a billion consumers, and not to mention $2.5 trillion economy. So in that sense, I think people and street observers have been too concerned about whether the Ambanis are empire building and whether this is wasted money and so on and so forth. But what they don't get is the entrepreneurial DNA of the company, as I was emphasizing, that they've done this over and over for 4 decades. This was a textile company, it had no business in petrochemicals, it had no business getting into oil refining, and they've done that, building world-class assets, building very large businesses organically.
And you did talk about dividends a little bit. I was wondering if you would elaborate a little bit more on capital allocation in general and whether there's anything you would like to see management prioritize differently than they are doing at this time.
So if we go back to the slide on oops, how do I jump back? Yeah, so if we see the slide on capital allocation, this has been the history. For the last 10 years, telecom got the bulk of it, and there was a large chunk, also about a third, to oil and gas and the petrochemical business essentially. So this has been the priority for the last 10 years, and it tells us where this company is going. So as a minority shareholder, I would say that the value creation opportunity that Reliance and its owners and managers have probably beats the value creation opportunity that any smaller shareholder has. So they have skin in the game. Ultimately, like I said, the family that owns this company has most of the net worth in this company. So for some reason, if they screw up and they waste capital, then they stand to lose the most, which gives me a lot of comfort. So I'm not from the school of thought that believes that the company should increase dividends or should do something to give money back to shareholders and so on. I believe that this is a company that is built to do new entrepreneurial things, and that track record gives me comfort that they will succeed with telecom too.
And for someone who would like to track this idea, what would be some of the key data points to track in order to either validate your thesis or challenge it?
So the way I intend to do it is I will sort of over this year keep looking at how the telecom market is post all these consolidations and acquisitions that have happened. I will track carefully how the market shares are falling for 4G. I will track carefully what Reliance is doing on the content side to make their offering or to make their service differentiated. And the most important thing to track may be the development of 5G, which at the moment is sort of, I think we are a little distance away from it. Like in North America, the trials are supposed to start later this year. But I think this may be the first time that India will get a new telecom technology at the same time as the rest of the world. And given the attendant size of the Indian economy, the size of the consumer base, it would be very interesting to see how Jio is able to capitalize in both consumer and enterprise with 5G. So I would track. So in summary, I would track the evolution of the 4G market, the performance for Reliance of the oil business as well, and how quickly that enables them to, let's say, deleverage, cut back on debt, and also the health of the competitors along with the evolution of 5G.
Wonderful. Well, Rajiv, thank you again so much for taking the time to be with us and articulate your thesis. I would just like to encourage our members and participants to feel free to follow up with you directly with their own questions or thoughts. Of course, we also stand ready to facilitate an introduction. And with that, thanks again. We truly appreciate you being here.
Thank you very much, John.
Goodbye for now.